I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan are here with me. And now news director Colin Jeffrey switches to his superhero alter ego, Showbiz Boy, to talk about movies and TV and showbiz stuff new this weekend. Hi, Colin. How are you?
Doing well. How are you, Paul?
Good. I haven't seen you for a couple of weeks. I was off last Friday because we had the Children's Miracle Network Radiothon on the air, and there weren't any particularly big movies that were coming out last week anyway.
No, but there was a good one, Born to be Blue, with Ethan Hawke as Chet Baker.
Oh, yeah?
Really liked it, and he's excellent in it. It seems foolish to release it because they're going to forget about him by the time nominations come around.
Mm-hmm.
But he was very good, and the movie's good. I quite enjoyed it.
Okay, there's another movie about a musician out in a couple of weeks with Don Cheadle playing Miles Davis, which I've seen, but I can't review for you.
Yes, we've got a glut of movies around jazz trumpeters.
Yeah. Let's now name all of the great movies about jazz musicians. This completes the list of great movies about jazz musicians.
Pretty much, yeah.
That's about it. Mm-hmm. What is opening this weekend? We've got four movies out this weekend, and I know I haven't seen any of them because I was out on vacation this week. Oh. What have you seen?
Couldn't sneak in a movie on vacation?
No, didn't.
Okay, fair enough. I saw The Boss. I did not see Hardcore Henry, Demolition. I don't even know the fourth one.
Everybody Wants Some.
Everybody Wants Some. Yeah, I couldn't see that. That was at the same time as The Boss.
Well, let's start talking about that one for just a second, because all I know about Everybody Wants Some is it's made by Richard Linklater,
mm-hmm.
who made the most romantic movie of all time, Before Sunrise, made an Academy Award-winning movie in Boyhood, and also has made other kinds of movies like Dazed and Confused, which this one is said to be not a sequel to, but very much like a sequel to Dazed and Confused.
A spiritual sequel.
Okay.
It's a group of college baseball players navigating college.
In the
80s. Adulthood. In the 80s, mm-hmm. yes. And I love Dazed and Confused. I really liked that, and I wish I could have seen this, but I had to go see The Boss.
Okay.
Is Richard Linklater in any relation to Art Linkletter?
No.
Okay.
Name spelled completely differently.
Oh, okay.
One is Art, and the other one is Richard.
Hey.
Oh. Okay. That makes sense.
What is Hardcore Henry?
It's a first-person shot movie using a GoPro that is supposed to be like a video game. A guy running around and doing game stuff.
Stop.
Shooting people.
Stop.
Jumping on stuff.
Fine.
I think there's a helicopter.
Okay, good.
There's got to be a helicopter.
There's more guns. There's guns.
It sounds like one of those things that they pitched in the room, and somebody said, yeah, we could definitely sell that. And then they made the movie.
They made it with no one you've ever heard of, so they're probably still going to make money.
Wow, you just keep making me want to see it even more.
And a GoPro. So they spent all of $300 on the equipment for the movie.
All right. Demolition is also out this weekend. All I know about this is his new Jake Gyllenhaal movie, and I like him a lot.
His wife died, I believe, and it's him picking up the pieces after his wife's death, and I also like him.
Okay. The one that you have seen, which we can talk about at length here, is the new Melissa McCarthy movie, The Boss.
Yes. And she partnered again with her husband, Ben Falcone.
I got to be honest with you. I'm surprised that they would have Melissa McCarthy play Bruce Springsteen in A Story of His Life. It just seems like original casting to me.
That would have been better. And yet, these two don't have a great track record when he directs and she isn't. They made Tammy together. Mm-hmm. And that was very bad.
Mm-hmm. Now, he was the air marshal in Bridesmaids,
yes.
right?
In Bridesmaids, that's, yes.
Yeah, okay.
He's a funny actor in his own right,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know that he's not going to be a good director. I just think he needs to stop casting his wife in these movies.
Or she needs to stop hiring him. Believe me, that's how the hierarchy works in that family.
Either way,
is not hiring her. She is hiring. She is the power.
Okay? I'll buy that.
She's the one who's been in some movies that have made over $100 million.
Yes.
How many of his movies have done that?
None.
And she's bigger than him.
Yes. Yeah, plus, she just goes around the house and says, all right, everybody in this family who's had a hit sitcom on CBS for years, raise their hand.
Yes. Yeah.
I notice I'm the only one with a hand in the air here for Mike and Molly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's this movie.
So you're taking out the trash is the end of that. But so in his case, he's not just taking out the trash, he's making the trash.
Yeah.
You see what I did there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you turn things around.
Just like comedy.
Melissa McCarthy plays Michelle Darnell, who's a titan of... She does something and makes a lot of money, and it's in business. And then she also gives, like, motivational speeches and shouts at people to look out for themselves. And that's the motivation behind her character. Kristen Bell plays her assistant for the beginning of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And things take a sideways turn when Melissa McCarthy, when Michelle, is convicted of insider trading.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the obligatory sequence of 6 months inside a white-collar prison.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, isn't it funny? She's playing tennis in there. Ooh. There's supposed to be a lot of jokes up to this point in the movie, because right now we're probably 25% of the way through the movie.
And no jokes?
Well, there are jokes.
They're just not funny?
They're not funny. And you're going to notice. You're really going to notice if you see this, that there's a lot of scenes that just end mid-scene. It looked like they were going to try and do something more, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, we're over here now. This a day later, an hour later.
Did she write this with him?
No. I don't know. I think he wrote it with someone else.
Okay.
No. Wow. Yeah, so about a quarter of the way into the movie, and her chief rival in this is Peter Dinklage, who plays a former lover slash co-worker who she took his client and took his promotion, and now they are soured on one another.
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be funny because his name is Ronald, but he changes it to Renault, and that's supposed to be funny.
That is funny.
That is very funny.
And that is comedy. Dan, you know comedy. Is that funny?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm laughing. I'm screaming inside.
And they go back to that probably half a dozen times.
That's the mark of good comedy, yeah, when you're screaming on the inside.
Oh, yeah.
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 And they go back to that joke probably six times. Oh, you're Ronald. Renew. Oh, and it's as funny as it is now.
Yeah.
And this
does it get funnier? Because it seems like the kind of joke that just gets funnier
every time,
the more you do it.
Yeah. It's,
yeah.
Renew.
They're not quite certain. Where the movie starts to finally pick up is after she gets out of prison. She has nowhere else to go. She goes to Kristen Bell's apartment. Kristen Bell has a young daughter, and she essentially, I need to live on your couch because all my money's been seized. I don't have anywhere else to be, so of course I'm going to go live with my former assistant, who now has a new job. And in the course of living with her, she says, okay, I'm going to help out with your daughter some. And one of the tasks she's given is to take her to the Dandelion Club. It's like Girl Scouts, but they couldn't get the name because this is rated R. So the Girl Scouts weren't going to say, yes, have our girls swearing and doing all this horrible stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when she realizes these girls sell cookies. Wouldn't it be great if I could make this a for-profit thing and bring home money myself, help the girls fund college and sell brownies? Because Kristen Bell makes great brownies. So this is the comedic turn. She's now going to reinvent herself as a businesswoman by having young girls sell brownies.
Okay, I have to stop you right here.
That's fair.
I think about 20 years ago, when Shelley Long was hot on Cheers,
okay,
she made a movie called Troop Beverly Hills.
Yes, she did.
Which was about a successful businesswoman who falls on hard times and finds herself actually having to set up as effectively the den mother of a Girl Scout-like troop in Beverly Hills, but because it's Beverly Hills, they're all snooty and snotty about all of that.
Yes.
And so she has to do outrageous things to help them raise money for whatever.
Yes, the big difference is she didn't have a business background. She was just a housewife, and so now she was having to learn how to be on her own, and part of that was exploiting child labor in Beverly Hills, in Troop Beverly Hills.
Yeah, know? I'm going to guess that while Melissa McCarthy was off making successful movies and a sitcom, Ben Patron was home looking at Stars, Encore, and the Movie Channel on their cable system, came across Troop Beverly Hills and said, I can update this without paying Shelley Long or anybody else.
It's very possible.
That sounds like what he's done here.
It is. Now, what they decided to
do. And by the way, Troop Beverly Hills was a terrible movie.
Oh, it's very bad.
Are okay. The brownies pot brownies?
No, they're just brownies that are delicious because every assistant to a Fortune 500 CEO makes mm-hmm. delicious brownies.
Of course they do, sure.
Mm-hmm. Why not? I mean, there's not just
watch
go
the
with
Food
it.
Network and you can find that out all the time.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. So this Renault finally starts.
Put it up there, in there.
You use that to better effect than anything they did within the movie.
Hey, actually, the timing was perfect and it was funny on this show. In the movie, lays like an egg.
Yes. The movie actually picks up a bit when the kids got involved. I didn't think I would like necessarily that it's a rated R movie and we're just going to have kids swearing and punching one another and doing these adult things.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that I liked that, but the kids added energy at least. It was just another Melissa McCarthy movie. literally bouncing off walls, which is my big issue.
I haven't seen the commercial, but I haven't seen the movie, but I saw the commercial in which there's a Murphy bed, you know, one of those beds that folds down out of the wall.
It's a sofa couch because she's put off by how pedestrian and
It's not a Murphy bed. It's a sofa, and she's trying to fold it back up, and when it does, the spring is so strong that it throws her into the wall.
Yes. Yeah. And they return to that one.
Wow.
I've seen that before.
Kind of the visual equivalent of Renault, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I've never seen a spring so strong on one of those sofa beds.
Yes. Oh, it's... there are times when it's funny with the kids. There are funny scenes in here. There's just a lot of junk in between them. And you can tell how well a comedy is doing when I'm sitting there and I'm like, I think I heard some people laughing up front. Like, you're sitting, I can't hear anyone laughing around me, and I'm like, I think I heard some people. Mm. My first thought was, it's Dan here. Because
because Dan laughs at every comedy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But
Renault!
That's a car, too.
It is. It is. It's a typical three-act comedy, trouble, rise, issues, resolution. Like, there's nothing to change about what happens in this
movie. Let me ask you this. You said that there are several scenes where they couldn't come up with an ending for the scene. Did they come up with an ending for the movie, or does it just lay there?
I think they ended it. They ended it. They ended it. It skipped over. It just got foolish. The last 15 minutes were just dumb. Like, the rest was this was dumb. It ended, and I don't know where this came from.
So here's what happened. When the movie came to a conclusion, you were already so fed up from the previous 75 minutes of watching this.
Yes.
That when it ended, you went, all right, thank God we can get out of here. Yeah. This thing is done.
Yeah, and it's very frustrating to see her doing this over and over, where it's just like, I'm going to be loud and boisterous and bounce off walls and jump around.
Do you think that's all she can do? Because I've never seen her do much of anything else.
No, I think there's more to it. I think in St. Vincent, the Bill Murray.
Oh, you know what? That's true. She was the next door neighbor, and she was very good in that.
She was, and when she was funny, it was because she was sarcastic, and it wasn't bouncing around comedy. It was how it was written and delivered was funny.
And Bridesmaids, she was...
A little.
She was funny in that, but that wasn't... Her husband didn't direct that either.
Right. It was Paul Feig. Was directing Ghostbusters.
And she's in the new Ghostbusters, Melissa McCarthy, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I'm not looking forward to that, I can tell you right now.
This is really just, unless you're a huge Melissa McCarthy fan and you're saying, I loved everything you're saying about Tammy and all these other, then go see it. Yeah. But what I couldn't help but compare it to was Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly doing Step Brothers. Mm-hmm. That was a rated R movie. And I was very skeptical because I'm like, oh, they're just going to do this so they can say bad words. That is so funny. That's one of my favorite Will Ferrell movies because he'd done a bunch of stinkers, and I really liked Step Brother. They explored sort of that rated R space, not to just to say bad words and, you know, show things that they couldn't show. They made it funnier. They added to the jokes, I thought, with that.
All right. So
this is not.
On a scale of 0 to 10, what are you giving Melissa McCarthy in The Boss?
Three.
Okay.
And that's because... It was actually like the energy picked up with the kids.
Still better than like Big Fat Greek Wedding 2, which I reviewed a couple of weeks ago and had that same problem. You know, you kept looking up and going, well, we've seen this joke 9 times now.
Yeah.
It's still not funny. Renault.
Yeah.
It's just not working.
See, the funnier we say it, every time we say it, it gets funny.
Well, you know what? If Ben Falcone were here, he'd screw it up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I have to ask you, because you are a showbiz boy and comic book boy.
Yes.
I didn't see it, but I'm sure you did. There's a trailer for the next Star Wars movie, Rogue One.
Yes.
Available.
Yeah, it looks fun.
As I said, I haven't seen it. I don't really know anything else about the Star Wars universe, nor care. I know this is deeply embedded in your soul. So what do you think?
I liked the idea of it. I like where they're taking us.
What is the idea? Where are they taking us?
They are taking us back to the construction and completion of the first Death Star, the original Death Star. The plans were stolen. You may remember they say, oh, we stole the plans.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we know that we can shoot a torpedo down this one hole that they've conveniently placed in the side of this gigantic star base. How did they get those plans? This is that story.
So this is before Luke Skywalker.
Or concurrent, sort of, because we actually... I encourage you to watch the trailer, if for nothing else, than to see a very nicely computer-generated CGI sort of Death Star. It's really when they sort of reveal it.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, while Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and Harrison Ford appeared in the latest Star Wars movie that just came out a few months ago, this next one
will not
have any of them in it.
No, this is about the Rebels.
Okay, will it have any of the people who were in the last Star Wars movie?
No, because it's so far. It's 25, 30 years
Will
before.
It, like the recent Star Wars movie, have a female...
Yes, it seems to be centered around a woman.
Okay, good.
Which is, again, good. It looks fun because you're not dealing with all of the same... You know, you're not dealing with someone who's got the Force and everything. It doesn't look like it. It's a band of people they put together to go get these plans.
And while we're talking about comic book and sci-fi and all of that sort of stuff, I haven't seen you for a couple of weeks since Batman vs. Superman came out.
Yeah.
And neither of us gave it a very positive review. Mm-hmm. And I saw that its fall off in the box office was something like 60% from its first weekend to its second weekend. Now, that doesn't really change the fact that it still has made, what, $500 million or something like that?
It's up to $700 billion or $700 million, not $700 billion, $700 million.
It's just a critic-proof movie.
Sort of. What we're seeing is that there's a huge problem with word of mouth of this movie.
Oh, yeah?
And it was so poorly received by critics, by... To give you an idea, there's something called Cinema Score, and that's when they ask people on their way out, they're like, oh, what'd you think of the movie?
Mm-hmm.
And you give it a rating.
Mm-hmm.
Everything gets like a Dan score, like an A or A minus. That's just about everything.
Yeah.
They get really good scores.
Dan, have you ever given a movie an F?
Oh, yeah.
Or a zero on a scale of 10?
Yes. Natural Born Killers.
Oh, okay.
I hated that movie.
Okay.
There was another one, but I can't even remember what it was.
You just didn't find it funny?
No, I didn't find that funny at all.
Okay, so Cinema Score.
It got the same Cinema Score as the Halle Berry Catwoman.
Wow.
And the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern.
Wow.
So this is not a good, like, audiences don't really love it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's bad. It had this enormous fall off, and everyone is now nervous looking forward because Zack Snyder, who did this, has the reins of Justice League 1 and 2. And this is a problem for Warner Brothers, DC, whoever, Warner Brothers, really. Because this is Man of Steel and now Batman vs. Superman that Zack Snyder both did. People did not like. Critics didn't like either of them.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it's making money, it's not a sure thing to hit $1 billion. That's how much it's falling off. Like $700 million entering its third weekend should be, yep, billion, no problem.
Yep.
Probably not.
Really?
Yeah. And so they're looking, Warner Brothers denies reports that they are putting a new producer alongside him to say, this is a bad idea, don't do this. And so we'll see what happens. But that is, I mean, this would be very bad for them if they keep losing money on
this. This is what they expect to be a huge franchise that they can keep just essentially printing money with.
Yes.
But
to give you an idea of the other movies that Warner Brothers has put out recently, Jupiter Ascending. That lost a bucket of money and was awful. Pan, that was awful and lost money. And The Heart of the Sea, that was not good and lost money.
Oh, that was the Ron Howard Moby Dick movie. Yeah.
And so they were hoping...
Am I allowed to say Moby on the radio?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
They were hoping this would buoy their sales, but, I mean, this is not... It's going to make money, yes, but the sort of break-even point is about $800 million, given budget and...
What? Wait a second. They have to make $800 million to break even? There's some Hollywood accounting for you right there.
Well, they write off all these losses. So the movie itself and promotions, they say right about $400 million. And so it has to do $800 million before they'll really start making a profit off of it. Which sounds weird to say. What happens to that $400 million? Well,
yeah.
That's where accounting comes in, because they have to make certain those actors don't get paid too much, so they funnel money over here, and
right.
It's real shady.
You know, I recently saw an interview with Tom Hanks, who, of course, won an Academy Award for Forrest Gump, and also had some profit participation. He got a percentage or two, or whatever percentage it was, very small, 1-3% of the movie. And you would think when you have that on the back end, eventually you're going to get a nice big check with Forrest Gump, which has made a lot of money. Even though it costs quite a bit to make because of the special effects, it's made an enormous amount of money. And on its 10th anniversary, he called up the accounting department at whatever the studio was and says, I'm just curious, how close am I to getting that check? And the woman said, well, hold on, let me check. Oh, no, that's that is still deep in the red. We're not even close. 10 years after it had come out and everybody had been talking about the box of chocolates and all of that sort of stuff, that's how Hollywood accounting works. Don't ever take a back-end deal. Get your money up front, because that's money. On the end, it's just promises. And that you can't pay your mortgage with promises.
No. I don't think Tom Hanks has promises.
No, I don't think he does either. But there are plenty of people who don't get that in the long run. Now, one other thing I wanted to talk to you about movie-wise here is this controversial screening room service that some business people have tried to start up. And one of the business people is Sean Parker, who was one of the people in Napster and an investor in Facebook very early on, played in the Facebook movie The Social Network by Justin Timberlake. He and a guy who used to be in the music industry started up this business called The Screening Room. And the idea was, the day a movie was being released to theaters, it would also be released on demand for you to watch at home. But not for $2.99 or $3.99. It would be something like $50. And if you think, well, I'm not going to pay $50 for a movie. You know, if you've got a family of four, that's really only $12.50 or, you know, whatever the price turns out to be. You can invite 10 people over, and now you've amortized it down to $5 a person, and you're all seeing a major Hollywood release on the day that it's going to be in theaters. Mm-hmm. As you would expect, movie theater companies hate this idea because it means nobody's coming in and buying $7 popcorn and $12 sodas and, you know, $14 jujubes and all those other things that are up there where, what a surprise, the largest is also your best value.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you can get a refill of this two-gallon tub of popcorn.
Right.
Well, if you want the tub, you're going to have to pay 50 cents extra. Otherwise, you get the refillable bag.
Yes.
Here, put your hands out.
Yeah.
So, you know, movie theaters want that revenue because they make way more money. I mean, they essentially make money off of the snack bar and not really off of the movies.
No.
Very, very small percentage of the movies. So they're completely opposed to this, but there's a battle going on in Hollywood about whether they want to go forward with this. What are your thoughts on it?
I think the people who are going to see movies now, I think most of them go because they like the experience. The turnaround from movies in theaters to home is very, very quick. I'm sure there'll be a small percentage of people who say, oh, I'm going to skip movies now, but you have to pay for the box. It's $50 to rent the movies. Mm-hmm. It's not inexpensive. And they clearly don't believe in it too much, because it appears that every time that you rent a movie, you also get two digital tickets to go see the movie if you wanted to.
And if you don't have a screen the size of your wall, I mean, you like to go into the movie theater and see that big
Gravity would have been great on a 28-inch screen.
Yeah.
That's really...
Well, I remember when we reviewed it, we said see it on as large a theater as you possibly can.
Yeah.
But there are some smaller movies. For instance, the movie Room, which Brie Larson won an Academy Award for last year.
Uh-huh.
You didn't have to see that on a giant screen in a movie theater.
No.
You know, it helps the experience, because all movies are much better when you're seeing them in that environment rather than on your 30 or 40-inch TV at home, if you have one of those.
The way I look at it, though, it's not necessarily a great parallel, but boxing charges to see pay-per-view matches that night.
Yep.
I still think they're selling out every time there's a boxing match. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not the same one for one, but I'd say the audience for boxing is much smaller than it is.
Yep.
And I mean, they can still sell the tickets to go see the boxing match. And if you've ever been to a box, the seats are horrible. They are atrocious by and large. Yeah. You can't see what's happening.
Wrestling's the same way.
Yeah.
But those are
WWE sells out 50,000 seat arenas.
Yeah.
And if you're sitting up there, it looks like little Legos playing.
But those are events that are on at a certain time, and you have to watch them. A movie, you know, if you don't see it on Friday night, okay, you go see it on Saturday afternoon or, you know, whenever you want.
No. I get that. And I think the blockbusters aren't going to be hurt. And
do you think if it were possible for you as a Star Wars fan and as a comic book movie fan to see Batman versus Superman before you had seen it, now that you know that it stinks, but you had that hype where, oh man, I can't wait till that comes out, I really want to see that, would you have paid $50 to watch it at home? Now you don't have to get a babysitter for your daughter. Now you don't have to go out and get food. You don't have to pay money for concessions. You can get it all yourself and deal with it on your own time.
First of all, what type What type of parent do you think I am that I wouldn't take McKenna to a Star Wars movie and introduce her to Star Wars?
Okay.
So, no. But I would always go. I like the process of going to movies. I even like waiting in line at movies. It doesn't bother me.
Mm-hmm.
It's all fun and adds to the experience.
And for those smaller movies, there isn't going to be that hype that's going to make you say, oh, I can't wait to see that. I have to see it the day it opens in my house.
Yeah. No, you'll see it, and it's not bad because Room didn't make huge box office money because it's a tough movie to watch. And I don't know that you could say, hey, guys, want to get together and go see Room?
Or even Spotlight, which was the Academy Award winning movie for the year.
It's going to help movies like those. More people will see them. But no, I like going to the theater. I wish more people went.
And there's a sequel coming out to Room. Oh. Closet.
Can you see anybody ever paying $50 to see The Boss at home?
No. Mm. Oh, wow. Can you get refunds? That's the question. If you get like 10 minutes in, you're like, this is garbage. I never watch more than 10 minutes. I quit.
Yeah. You should be able to.
Yeah.
All right. That's all the movie stuff we have for this week. We're going to take a break here, and we've got to talk a little bit about the finale of American Idol, which aired on Fox last night. You watched the whole thing, Dan?
I did, yeah.
Okay, good. We'll talk about that when we come back here in a moment as the Showbiz Show continues here on the Big 550 KTRS. It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. Here's one of the bands that'll be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame tonight, Chicago. Well, they've only been around for 49 years. It's about time that they got in there, along with Steve Miller, NWA, Cheap Trick, and Deep Purple. It'll be recorded for HBO and then air probably sometime in the next month or two. And eventually we'll be saying those same things about the Upside Down Band, band that our
Southside Johnny Band?
That's what I said. Dan Strauss is a member of. You got a gig this weekend?
We do, tomorrow night. We're playing 8:30. We're playing at Stash. It's like a sports bar and grill. It's on Lime Ferry.
It's like a sports bar and grill.
Well, it is a sports bar and grill. It's right across from Melville High School.
Okay.
So on Lime Ferry there, tomorrow night, 8:30.
Great.
I'll be there.
Speaking of music, the finale of American Idol aired last night. Not just the season finale, but the series finale, if you believe the hype.
Or did it?
Well, yeah, that's what I heard Ryan said at the end, for now.
He said, good night, America. Pause. For now.
Mm-hmm.
And already Nigel Lithgow, who's the guy who produced the show, says, we're already planning on bringing it back. And Simon Fuller, who was the other producer, said, we'll probably... I'm going to guarantee you right now, no more than 5 years before American Idol is back on the air.
Yeah, in some form. They may change the format a little bit, but...
You know, their problem was they allowed Simon Cowell to leave.
Yes.
He was on there for 9 seasons, and once he left, as far as I was concerned, there was no reason to watch the show.
No, everyone else was too nice.
Ellen DeGeneres, Nicki Minaj.
Oh, my goodness.
Cara Diaguardi.
I forgot Ellen even did it. Yeah, there was just a...
and even the current crew. I mean, I haven't watched the show at all. The only reason I watched it last night was because I had watched it in the early years. It's like many other TV series that I watched for a long time, and then they announced it was going to be the series finale. Well, I got to watch that.
Right.
I got to go back and watch it. But I looked on the numbers here. You know that there was a time when Idol got 30 to 40 million people, not for the finale, for a regular Tuesday or Wednesday night show.
Oh, yeah.
Now, just to put that in perspective, they average between 8 and 9 million, and the finale last night had 13.4 million.
Wow.
So the most hyped episode of this season didn't even get half, maybe a third of what they were getting at the peak of that show, which has got to be the mid-2000s, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And what year did Carrie Underwood, was it the third or fourth year that Carrie Underwood won?
Because
after Carrie Underwood, it just kind of went... downhill.
Well, who else became a hit from that? You got Kelly Clarkson. Clay Aiken. I guess he went on to have a career.
Yeah, but he didn't win. He was not a winner.
Oh, Ruben Studdard was the winner.
Ruben Studdard. And what do you hear? He does a lot of R&B stuff, but I don't know.
He does gospel stuff. He never had any real hit albums.
Yeah, and then Chris Daughtry, and Daughtry didn't win. He was voted off. I can't remember. I don't even know if he was in the top five.
How about Jennifer Hudson? She didn't win. She came in fourth, and she got an Academy Award for Dreamgirls, and she's doing Broadway and all that. Fantasia?
Yeah, she won.
Okay.
But she's on Broadway. She does a lot of Broadway
stuff. But can you name anybody who's won on that show in the last 5 years?
Chris, what the heck's his name? When was
that's
Adam?
A no.
Yeah. Chris, oh, shoot.
Last night when they had all of the previous winners and a lot of the losers on there all singing, there was the country guy who kind of had like a Garth Brooks kind of low voice, you know?
Oh,
he sang like
that. Them doors and turn the lights down low.
Exactly what it, yeah.
Yeah.
And by the way, is it just me or do all the guys on that show who do country sound like that? And all the women, they're still trying to do Mariah Carey.
It was like a Randy Travis type of thing.
Yeah. But the women want to do those high runs and...
Oh,
yeah. You know, they want to do Somewhere Over the Rainbow as a 14-minute epic.
Yeah.
Because they've got to go...
Yeah.
Just, and they all sound exactly the same to me.
Mm-hmm. Are you thinking of Chris Daughtry?
No, not Chris Daughtry.
He was longer, I think, than
Chris Daughtry.
He wasn't even a winner, I don't think.
No, he wasn't. Yeah, he wasn't the winner. The winner was, what is his name? His name's right there. I can't think of his name. The guy that was the country guy.
You know who had to be happiest last night? Brian Dunkelman.
Oh, my goodness. Did you see him come out?
Yes. Brian, if you don't know this, when the show first aired in 2002...
The very first year.
There were two hosts of American Idol.
Yeah.
Because that's a job you need two people for, to introduce the judges and the singers.
Yeah.
It was Ryan Seacrest, luckiest man in broadcasting.
Yes.
And Brian Dunkelman, unluckiest man in broadcasting, who... He made it through the first season, right?
Oh, yeah. He went through the first season, and I think he quit the following...
Oh, did he quit, or did they fire him?
No, he quit.
Really?
He said, this is the story, he quit because he didn't think the show was really going to go anywhere.
What an idiot.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Ryan Seacrest has turned it into the base for him to do all sorts of stuff, which, by the way, includes forcing the Kardashians on the American public.
Yes.
You know, his company produces all those Kardashian-related shows on E! Plus, he's got radio shows
Bravo,
and all that stuff.
I think he does show. Well, yeah, no, they're on E! Yeah.
Yeah, and he wouldn't have any of that if it hadn't been for American Idol. It was interesting last night watching them overdoing the lights and the suspense and everything.
Holy moly.
That show was never exactly known for subtlety, but building up to the fake surprise of Simon Cowell being there. You know, when they brought out Paula Abdul and Randy Jackson.
Yeah, and I almost thought that Ryan Seacrest, he looked legitimately surprised, but I don't know.
Well, he's not a good actor, so maybe he was.
No.
But, no, you know, we talk about Brian Dunkelman making a big mistake and leaving. Do you know, remember why Simon Cowell left the show?
I don't remember.
He went off to start his own series called The X Factor.
That's right.
Because it had been, this whole thing actually started in England with a show that he was on called Pop Idol. He was on that for 2 years. Then he came here with the same producers. He wasn't a producer. He was just a record company guy. And he came here and he made that show work. Being the mean guy was the reason you tuned in, to see him cutting people down and being honest with them while Paula Abdul loved everybody. And then he did it for 9 seasons. And then during the off seasons of Idol, he was back in England starting up his own show called X Factor, which was a big hit over there.
Yeah.
And then he tried to bring it to the United States and sold it to Fox, which loved him because of Idol. And they put them both on in the same season, as opposed to running Idol in the spring and X Factor in the fall. They put them both on in the same season. And it bombed.
Oh, it did.
It bombed.
It wasn't good.
Now, I think in the meantime, NBC had brought on The Voice, which still does very well for them.
Oh, The Voice is a really good show and has very good talent on it.
But there was a time when Idol was the show. Now, we're talking about a time where the internet was just really starting up and you didn't have instant replay of everything on every website the next day. If you missed something on Idol, then you missed the conversation at the water cooler the next day or at school or wherever you were. But now, I mean, I haven't heard anybody mention American Idol in years.
No. No, not at all.
So,
and I haven't watched it for the past couple years. So they're showing these people up there that won, and it's like, Chris Allen was the guy that beat Adam Lambert out.
But Adam Lambert on the show last night? I didn't see him.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't. One of the most talented singers that Idol's ever had on there, by the way.
My wife said he's not on there because he's now the lead singer of Queen.
He is. That's right. Wow. That was his dream band. Mm-hmm. And then they made him the singer of Queen. And But, man, he can sing like Freddie Mercury, that's for sure.
Interesting. One other TV note I want to mention.
The one thing I do want to say about Idol last night.
Yeah.
Jennifer Lopez, mm-hmm. when she got up and performed.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Holy macaroni. That was unbelievable.
Yeah.
And she is very talented in that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Man, oh, man. And those outfits. Wow.
Easy now.
I know.
Whew. On a non-Idol point, one other TV thing I have to mention. This Sunday night at 10 o'clock, Channel 9 here in St. Louis is airing a documentary called An Honest Liar, which is about my friend James Randi, the amazing Randi. It's part of their Independent Lens series. Set your DVRs for this because it is really about his remarkable career, not just as a guy who has gone around the world taking down people who claim to have paranormal abilities and debunking nonsense like that, but also his early days as a stage magician and then as an escape artist in the Houdini tradition and debunking Peter Popoff and other faith-healing preachers on TV. And then in the last third of the movie, there's a surprise from Randy's own life that turns out to be a deception that he really didn't want to have go public. And I'm not going to spoil it for you, but I'm going to urge you to set your DVR to watch it. 10 o'clock Sunday night on Channel 9. It's called An Honest Liar. I think you'll enjoy it. And I don't just say that because I chipped in some money to have the movie produced. An Honest Liar, Sunday night on Channel 9 here in the St. Louis area.
Oh, Scotty McCreary was the guy that went, baby, lock them doors and turn the lights down low.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Next hour, the Harris Challenge, Knuckleheads in the News, and Mike Evans. We're glad you're with us here on the Big 550 KTRS.